from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the 1990s when a singer and songwriter went out to L.A. at the invitation of pop star Paula Abdul. The songwriter was Cara DioGuardi, who had dreams of her own stardom but also had tremendous ability in writing for others. She thought her song, called Spinning Around, was going to be a Paula Abdul hit. Then she found out a different performer was going to record the song. If it seemed like a big letdown at the time, that letdown probably didn't last. Kylie Minogue did just fine with Spinning Around, and other performers were soon calling Cara DioGuardi. Now, she was also focused on her own career, and she learned that the music industry can be fickle. For a lot of performers, they feel like luck is involved. You can get signed, then dropped, then signed, then dropped. Meanwhile, Cara DioGuardi's songwriting resume has exploded, so it wasn't a surprise that eventually Fox and Simon Cowell asked Cara DioGuardi to become a judge on American Idol in the 8th and 9th seasons. Today, DioGuardi is writing, producing, singing, I think, and she's in Rochester today talking songwriting with students. She's a guest of the Institute of Popular Music for the University of Rochester, and tonight the public can come meet her. But first, she's my guest for the hour. Great to have Cara DioGuardi here. Nice to see you.
I'm glad to be here.
And
nice
John
to meet you.
John Kovach is the mad mind behind bringing Cara here. John is the director of the Institute for Popular Music at the University of Rochester. And you've got this series where you bring these industry titans to town.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Of course, we have Cara tonight at 7:30 in Lower Strong over at the university. Absolutely free and open to the public. You're encouraged to be there. She and I will talk about probably a lot of the same things we'll talk about today, although there'll be opportunities to ask her questions. And then next week, we've got Bill Flanagan coming in at 7:30 on Wednesday, one of the guys who's very responsible for the development of MTV and VH1 over the last couple of decades. So it's wonderful to have these folks in town. And people, even people who are casual fans of music, learn an awful lot about the inner workings of what goes on in the music business. You know, it's not just like it looks on TV.
Well, no, it's a lot harder, let me tell you.
Well, that experience for you, writing for what you thought was Paula Abdul, were you disappointed when you found out it was going to be Kylie Minogue and not Paula Abdul doing your song?
I would say I was a little bit concerned because I thought, oh, this could be, you know, definitely that moment I was waiting for. You know, she was a very visible pop star in the United States and worldwide. And Kylie Minogue, I had never even heard that name. But I was in England when I actually found that out, and people were like, oh, no, she's huge here. And then they showed me the video. And there's a kind of a great moment in the video where you see this ridiculous derriere. I mean, it's just like unbelievably formed and taut and moving in a way that my derriere never moved. And I was like, you know what? Wow, I think this could maybe go somewhere.
Did your phone ring after that?
No, it didn't, actually. what happened was it became a big hit, and then I went and took a trip over to England to write, and everybody canceled on me.
So everybody canceled?
Yeah, it was kind of depressing. I thought this was my big moment, and it was like...
Why did they cancel?
Because you have one hit. You think that one hit is like going to change everything, and it does and it doesn't. You know, it's kind of that... what have you done for me lately thing. Hmm. So it has to be one hit, two hits, three hits. Then three hits, people start going, all right, maybe she's on to something. But it did absolutely nothing for me in the States.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I mean, John can probably speak to this. I've talked to people who would love to be writing music, and they do think, if I could just break through with one, mm-hmm. that will do it.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that. It's that one will lead you to another opportunity that hopefully leads you to a second and a third and a fourth. And, you know, then you're on your way, but you're always proving yourself and you're always evolving and you're always changing. And I think for me, you know, after doing this for so many years, you have to be okay with taking breaks and switching roles in the room in order to stay current. You know, it's kind of a work in progress all the time.
So when you were in that position, you had a hit song, but maybe it wasn't the floodgates that you thought might happen. You also had to think about your own career. What was the prime objective for you at that time?
Well, I had been signed and dropped. And so what happened was people started getting a hold of my songs and saying, you know, I really like this song. My artist would, I think she'd dig it, you know, would it be okay if she cut it? And I was like, well, you know, I never thought about it, but if it's going to keep me from going back to my day job, sure. And I started to really love writing for other people. It allowed me to be many different versions of myself. You know, one day I could be rock, one day I could be pop, one day I could be somewhere in between. And it really suited my personality. I'm a bit all over the place. And for artists, you can't really be that. You got to stay true to whatever it is you're working on in that space and in the vision of that album for a pretty long cycle.
I've heard you say that you thought at least the first time you got dropped from a label was because you still didn't really know what your persona as an artist was. And that's not the same as not knowing who you are as a person, which is interesting.
I actually think that you definitely have to know what you're going for as an artist, who you are, where you fit in the grand scheme of what's going on. And hopefully you don't fit in. Hopefully you're different and you're groundbreaking. That's what you're really looking for. And I think there are many people that are really good, but the difference between good and great is massive. And it usually involves spinning what we all think of as, you know, the big themes of love and loss, twisting it in a way that we've never heard, and then also having an artist who looks a way we've never seen or acts a way that's familiar but not familiar and is creating a brand kind of in real time. A lot of things have to happen for that artist to have impact, but they definitely have to be able to say something in a unique way. That's kind of the most important thing in today's market.
John Kovach, you and I have talked about many of the greatest music acts in history. And when Kara talks about understanding your persona, I'm thinking of all of the ones you and I have talked about on this program. Yeah. And you check right down the line.
Well, actually, you know, for people who are kind of rock-centric, right, ever since, at least the Beatles, the assumption has always been that the artist you hear is the artist who wrote the song. Right. And so when she says that you need to know who you are as an artist, that, of course, is a necessary thing. But it's also in some ways a kind of a limiting thing. So in her situation, what she's doing is actually much more typical of the history of the popular music business in the last 100 years. That is, specialized songwriters who write songs and specialized performers. I guess today maybe they're more involved in some of the writing than they were in Elvis's day or Frank Sinatra's day. But still, the idea of specialized songwriters, and it's kind of a different job. When you're a songwriter who can write for a number of different artists than it is when you're a songwriter who's only writing for yourself. Because as she says, you know, there's only so many things that Bruce Springsteen can do, and it's probably not going to be the next big country hit. You know, but Kara can do that. You know, she's got the advantage of being able to move across a broad range of styles and write in all kinds. And so there's a real, I think, artistic and creative reward in being able to have that kind of flexibility.
And I think the difference is, you know, there are a lot of artists out there that songwrite for other people as well. And they do it sometimes knowingly and sometimes not, like a Charlie, the girl who wrote Iconopops, I Love It. And then she's also an artist who wrote, you know, who came out with Boom Clap. I think that what I could liken it to is if you were a designer and you only wore a few pieces from your collection that fit you, that made you feel like the best version of yourself, but yet you designed the other part of the collection. And I do think, as an artist, you do need to know who you are. As a songwriter, you definitely need to know who you are and be comfortable in your skin. And for me, I was not comfortable in my skin, and I really didn't know who I was in my 20s because I grew up in a very conservative family. I was, you know, thought I was going to be a lawyer. I went to Duke. I mean, I was completely headed down the wrong path. And then I made this shift. And by the time I made the shift, you know, it took me almost a decade to get to know my feelings and what I was about. And, you know, when it didn't work out in a relationship, how do I portray that anger, that sadness, or that hurt in a way that's different from the songs that have come before me? And I think that some of the greatest songs are because people can really hammer down on that emotion in a way, you know, I give it the Adele. You know, I heard that you found a girl and you're married now, and, you know, but I couldn't help myself from coming here to see you, you know, kind of thing, where you feel like you're at the table with them. You know, she's telling you this story, and it's a story we all know, but she says it in such a brave way. You know, we don't like to talk about rejection, but yet we've all been rejected. So she really knew herself. She knew what she was feeling. And that is what I try to always impart on young students who I teach, that if you don't know yourself and you can't be honest with yourself about what you're feeling, you're going to have a very difficult time writing a song that touches others.
I grew up talking to two brothers who were both in music, and I've thought for years, as they've told me, they said, how many times has someone said, I feel alone, I feel unnoticed? That's a common thought. But if you say, she walks out the front door like a ghost into the rain and no one notices the contrast of white on white, like Adam Duritz did, amazing.
Right, well, you just go, wow, that made me stop doing whatever I was doing just now.
It's a great line. And yeah. It's a great way to express a common feeling outside of cliches, et cetera. But I'm also curious, Kara, do you learn pretty quickly?
By the way, your line was way better than my interpretation of Adele right there. I'm sure she would have been like, that's not how I said it. It's not what I meant at all. You know?
Talking to Kara DiGuardian, do you learn to part with your own material, especially if you've written something that's really sort of personal, and then you see someone else doing it? Is there ever a moment where you go, that's not exactly how I would have, you know, certain intonation or presentation, or do you learn to part with that?
Well, I wish I was born more of a purist, but I wasn't. I was born into a family where, you know, having a roof over your head and a white picket fence and a nice house was important. It was a way of the value or the definition of success. So when I was faced with, you know, my job at Billboard in my 20s and wanting to leave, you know, I always felt like I had to leverage. I had to have one foot in a place where I could make money and one foot doing what my soul was about. So as a songwriter, you know, sometimes you have to make those compromises where you're giving up something in order to stay, you know, doing music. And if I'd been more of a purist, I probably wouldn't be here right now, because I would have said no to many, many opportunities that led me to this moment. And I don't really regret, you know, giving my songs away, because in hindsight, I wouldn't have been a very good artist. I don't really like staying on one song for, you know, a year, 2 or 10 years, singing it over and over and over again. I love creating. I love forgetting about the song I wrote yesterday and going on to a new one. And I don't even do that anymore. I mean, I used to be every day creating. I love going on a vacation whenever I feel like I want to do it. I like, you know, not having to worry about my makeup being a nightmare, or the way he picked me up last night where I had dark sunglasses on because my eyes were all puffy from cleaning, you know, an apartment. So it's just, you know, I love that freedom. I like freedom. And being an artist sometimes has nothing to do with freedom. It's about being chained.
Is it the majority of music that we hear on popular radio now that is performed by people who did not write it? I mean, I think Taylor writes most of her stuff.
Well, she also collaborates. She'll collaborate with Max Martin, or, you know, when you say, I think it's never just the artist.
Right.
I mean, it can be just the artist, but it's usually a collaboration between many people. And that's actually, I love that part of it. That's my favorite thing.
Working with a team on a song?
Yeah.
Can we listen to some of the examples? So if you look up the credit for Ain't No Other Man, which is Christina Aguilera, you're on there with a team. And
yes.
If we could listen to a clip, and then we'll come back and talk about it. So
sure.
This is, Kara DiGuardi is one of the writers on this song that you've probably heard before, Christina Aguilera, Ain't No Other Man. That's Christina Aguilera, and that's going back better part of a decade now, isn't it?
I think. My God.
You want to tell us what you remember?
You didn't tell me you were going to do timelines here.
There would be no math. There would be no math, Kara.
Yeah.
Do you? You were part of a team there.
Yeah, and I never wanted to write that song.
Why is that?
She had this track, which was written by DJ Premier and another writer who I'm so bad with names. And it was a great guy, too. They had created the track. And she kept playing it, and it kept going, do y'all thing, honey. Do y'all thing, honey. This annoying, like, kind of voice on it. And I said, oh, God, I don't know about this one. This one's kind of annoying. She's like, no, I'm telling you, this is the song. This is the song. This is the track we need to write to. And I was like, oh, God, when she gets her mind on something, that's it. And she was right. And kind of the fact that I didn't really think it was great just made me kind of blurt out something and not think too much about it. And it's funny, most of the songs I've had success with have been the ones where I wanted to call the session, like it just was not going well. And in giving myself the freedom to say, you know, to get up and leave, it always comes to you. But when we recorded it, one of the writers, I'm not going to say his name, I'm sure he had a license for medical marijuana as well.
And he was really sick.
He was very, very really sick. There was a lot of smoke in the room, and I was completely getting a contact high and laughing, and, you know, Christina's in there singing her part out. And I was like, had to almost cover my mouth a few times because I was just busting out laughing. But that's only a few times I've ever really been in the room where there've been any kind of recreational
as many drugs as the stereotypes say.
Not around me. Well, I'm not, you know, I'm definitely not a drug person. So I think that people would think twice about kind of bringing it around me. Not because I'm like some prude, it's just it's not my thing. So I think if they know it's your thing. Yeah.
And when you're working,
yeah.
People
oh,
are working.
God.
You know,
I
there's
can't
money
even
on the table.
Sing.
Yeah.
What the one time I wrote when I was kind of inebriated was with Pink, and we wrote sober. but I went on to embarrass myself then after that. You know, I was just almost threw up on her. It wasn't a good thing. And then the next time I saw her, this was actually embarrassing because we had another session. It was like I was so happy to see her and like, you know, I'm like, oh, let's get more wine. And she just had babies and she was like a little bit more serious. And I was like, no, come on, let's have drinks. And before you knew it, I was kind of inebriated again. And I don't know, I just look at Pink and I think of red wine. I don't know why. She's just the coolest chick in the
world.
Those
are the exceptional
stories. I want to have a drink with her.
I mean, so they're a couple of those, but you know what you're really saying is that when people come to work, they come to work, and then they're serious-minded people.
Who make it in this industry work their butts off. I mean, work their asses off. Like at the time when I was having, you know, years of success, I was working, you know, 18-hour days. I'm not kidding. More than that at times. You know, just around the clock. It's like, and even when I was sleeping, I was working. It felt like I'd wake up and I'd have ideas and, you know, it's just, it never turned off. And I had to be, you know, real careful of that because once you open that channel and you're kind of looking for ideas all day long, it can be distracting and it can kind of bombard your life. Mm-hmm.
My guest in studio for the hour is Cara DioGuardi, who is a performer, a writer, a producer, a music industry professional and veteran, a former American Idol judge.
Sounds so serious.
Well, you know, I mean, that's pulled straight from the headlines, Cara. And she's in Rochester today.
I've been reading those.
She's in Rochester today, brought here by our friend John Kovach, the director of the Institute for Popular Music at the University of Rochester. John, what's the schedule today with Cara?
Well, at 3:30, we have a songwriting workshop with students from Eastman and the River Campus. That'll be over at Messinger Hall, right next to Eastman, right next to Java's there on Gibbs at 3:30. But the big event for the public is at 7:30 in Lower Strong Auditorium, where Cara and I will be there and speaking much as we are now, but there will be opportunities for people to have a chance to say hello and to ask some questions. So that will be fantastic. Absolutely free charge, Lower Strong Auditorium, 7:30.
I've got a pile of questions that have come in from maybe aspiring songwriters, people just curious about the industry. We're going to try to get to those later in the hour here. I want to play another clip if we could.
Sure.
And this one's going back 9 years. I actually looked this one up, so I have to ask Cara on this one.
Okay,
it's Kelly Clarkson, Walk Away is the song. Let's listen to the clip, and we'll come out and talk about it.
I know you know, I know, so what's the point in being? So let's get this show on the road today.
Go ahead, Val. You can dance back there. Our engineer behind the
Val's
glass.
Val's bopping along.
Val's loving it.
Val's like, oh, I remember when I was 2. I heard this.
She might have been 16 because it was 9 years ago. And Val, look at, she's just killing me here.
Pretty soon, I'm going to be so irrelevant because people are, you know, kids are going to. And remember Walk Away and the Walk Away what? What song is that? No. I have to keep writing for my kids so that someday you can be like, my mom wrote that.
Well, you know. But you, during that clip, you looked at me and you said a lot's changed in the music industry in 9 years. What's changed?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the way that you write melodies, the way that the way that you write lyrics, you can't really get away with that kind of straightforward.
You don't think that song right there would work today?
No.
Why?
Well, production-wise, it's totally not current. It's that rock pop thing is kind of dead, mm-hmm. and I just think it's not lyrically smart or crafty, or the lyrics kind of don't stand up to kind of what you would need to do today.
Interesting, yeah. John. Isn't it so interesting to hear someone who understands the industry so well just to immediately be able to kind of break down the texture of a song and say, that's dated, that's...
It's just not that good. Yeah. It's not good.
Well, it's one of the big hits. I mean, you have a catalog of... You've sold millions, and this is one of the bigger hits, and you're saying it's not that good.
Right. In today's standards, it's just... It's like, look back in the 70s or the way that people would... Take a song. Give me a song. Any song from the 70s, 80s.
Start Me Up from the 80s.
The Rolling Stones.
Rolling Stones.
Or
okay, let's not do the Rolling Stones.
Yeah,
okay?
Let's not pick
I'm
a classic.
Not going to critique the Rolling Stones. All right, but like, you know, Baby Come Back.
Yeah.
You can blame it all on me. You would never hear a song. Baby Come Back. You could blame it all on me. I was wrong and I just can't live without you. It's so straightforward. You know, today it's like, I'd catch a grenade for you. Because I think what happened is that...
Can I use that line?
Yeah, of course. I think what happened is... No, someone did... I hope, you know, Bruno did
oh,
do
right,
that.
Sorry.
Yeah, okay. I was like, oh, don't go and write that song.
Yeah.
But what's happened is rap became such a huge thing in the street, and kind of the way that they would write their lyrics was so smart and clever and so many metaphors that it started to infiltrate pop music. So now you have songs that are using those kind of, like, even Uptown Funk, or, you know, the song that's number one in the country right now is very straightforward, but
what's the song
or is on iTunes was the See You Again. That's a very straightforward lyric, and it's resonating, but it's also resonating because of, you know, it's the movie Fast and Furious, and the lead actor tragically, you know, died. So, but if you look at most of the chart, it is lyrically more complex than just a straight up, you know, come back.
And the other thing that goes on when we say, you know, to listen to Kara talk about this is that, you know, a lot of the press release on popular songwriting is that, you know, these ideas just float into your head unbidden, and it's all a kind of a natural, kind of easy kind of thing for those who have the gift. And clearly, it's necessary to have the gift. But one thing that Kara stresses in her book is how much hard work goes into it. I mean, you know, it's like that old 5% inspiration, 95% perspiration. And it's really true, even with the very most talented people in the business. And so, you know, the kind of skill that allows her to be able to isolate these kinds of things immediately is a kind of a not only an artistic vision but a craft that mm-hmm. comes from years and years of experience. I think a lot of times fans, or at least journalists, don't like to write it up that way because it seems a little too technical, and people would rather believe the myth of, you know, the art that just sort of floats into people's heads and it just happens, and that makes it more interesting somehow. But in fact, almost in any kind of music, and this goes with classical music and jazz, there's an awful lot of craft and understanding of the craft. And after you've been doing it for a while, you listen to something and you can spot things immediately because of that context.
Kara, do you see why every time John's on, I say, I wish he was my college professor. I wish when I was in school.
He's very astute.
I could listen to John talk music.
He does, and he's very soothing in the way he talks. Feeling very relaxed here.
John Kovach, University of Rochester, the director of the Institute for Popular Music is here. Kara DiAguardi, writer for, I mean, I could have chosen so many different artists that you have worked with and written for, but I wanted to grab one more here that is a little bit of a different direction. Darius Rucker,
mm-hmm.
And the song is called "This." So let's listen to a clip from "This," and then we'll come out and talk about working with Darius.
Maybe it didn't turn out like I planned. Maybe that's why I'm such a lucky man. For every stoplight I didn't make, every chance I did or I didn't take, all the nights I went too far, all the girls that broke my heart, all the doors that I had to close, all the things I knew but I didn't know. Thank God for all I missed, cause it led me here to this.
I mean, that was my like contribution there, because I was like Darius Rucker. Yeah.
How'd you hook up with Darius Rucker?
What a great guy. He's such a great guy.
Yeah.
So this producer writer Frank Rogers was in L.A. and we had set up a writing session right before an Idol day, and he came to my house and he had the start of this chorus and. He, you know, started singing it and playing it, and we worked on it. We got the verse and the chorus, and he said, I'm going to bring this. I'm going to play it for Darius Rucker. I'm working on his record. I said, great. And then Darius really liked it, so we all got on iChat and finished the second verse and the bridge. So it was like my foray into writing with, you know, technology. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty cool. And I've always, you know, loved writing in the country market because you just have the best lyricists and people, you know, there's nothing extraneous. Every word means something. And I was fortunate enough to work with Carrie Underwood, and that day was really special. We wrote Mama's Song and Undo It in the same day.
Oh, same day.
Same day, which was
That's
crazy.
A productive
and
day.
And I never met her. But I had some of the chorus to Undo It. I had thought about it in the shower and like almost killed myself getting out of the shower, grabbing the dictaphone, and had started that and came in and kind of hummed that to her. And she was like, yeah, I really like that. And then two of the guys we were working with, Luke Laird and Marty Fredrickson, they left. And we started talking about weddings and marriage. I was getting married and my mom had died. And I was thinking about, you know, songs and stuff, your dad, your talking about Where's the Mom song, and she was like, yeah, you know, this, what about the mother who's raised you and, you know, taught you the difference between pad and tampons and, you know, like important things, you know, which she doesn't get a song. So that's how Mama's Song came to be.
Wow. Cara DioGuardi in studio with us for the hour. She's in Rochester for the day as a guest of the Institute for Popular Music at the University of Rochester. We're going to take a very short break, and we're going to come back and hear more of her own music, talk more about the industry, get some of your questions answered for Cara DioGuardi this hour, and talk a little bit more with the professor about what this visit today means and how you can come out and see Cara tonight. So short break and much more with her next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections. You might have seen the scandal that Hillary Clinton visited a Chipotle and didn't leave a tip. I confess I don't know the tipping protocol at Chipotle or fast food restaurants, and that has sparked an interesting question. Where are we supposed to tip and where aren't we supposed to tip? We're going to explore tipping in all categories Thursday on Connections.
In the 1960s and early 70s, Cambodia had a thriving pop music scene. It was nearly wiped out in a purge ordered by the Khmer Rouge. A new documentary tells that story.
I was told by many people, you won't find anything. But a lot of the music was out there, and it's because people hit it.
Cambodia's musical legacy later on All Things Considered.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. If you're just joining us, Cara DioGuardi is here, a longtime and successful songwriter, performer, producer, a music industry veteran, former American Idol judge, and I didn't want to waste too much time on American Idol because I think probably everywhere Cara goes, people ask the same rote questions, and she probably gets tired of answering them. But what
you have a great question, is what you're about to say, right?
No,
you have
but
very different.
No, that's not what I'm saying. but I'm not going to ask you about Simon and all that stuff. What I want to do though is play a clip that kind of went viral. That at least in my listening to the clip, I feel like I'm hearing you talk more about some of your own experiences too, or at least admonishing the various people out there who want to make it. You had somebody come in during the auditions, and he had a bit of an attitude. He gets done performing, and let's listen to the clip. This is from American Idol season 8. Let's listen.
For Orleans.
Thank you.
Are you angry?
Am I angry?
You seem very on edge. Tell us, what happened?
What happened? I just am on edge from waiting all day, honestly.
So what?
Just from waiting. It's just...
Well, you know, the thing is, you want to be in the music business, but you don't want to wait to get into American Idol. That, to me, seems to be a problem. And,
that's
you know, for
point.
You to have a bad
it's
attitude
true.
About
no,
that kind of pisses
attitude.
Me off.
I think you're reading
actually,
it too far.
No, no, I'm not reading it too far. Because you just told me that you were a little bit annoyed that you had to wait
very
3
annoyed.
Hours
yeah.
to come in here and get your shot when there are people that would wait years to do so. So I am now angry at you.
To me, it sounds pretty telling. It sounds like you're talking to him, but you're talking to people who think that they can, you know, write one hit, all of a sudden everything's gravy or breakthrough and sort of snap your fingers, as opposed to the hard work that we've been talking
well,
about.
Well, I just thought it was shocking that this kid, and I mean, they cut.
Do you remember that moment?
Yeah, because they cut, you know, you don't see everything.
Sure,
like he
sure,
came
sure,
in
absolutely.
And he was, you know, like looking at the ground, and he, what's your name? And he's kind of, you know, begrudgingly telling you. And I think later on I heard it was an act. He kind of put that on. It was his way of getting his moment. You know, for me, I didn't know the difference, and I just felt like if he's going to have this problem right now, where he's upset that he had to wait 3 hours to perform in front of people that could possibly give him a shot to be on the show, then imagine what's going to happen to him when he writes 100 songs and not one person replies when he sends it to them.
Yeah.
Or he gets rejected. You know, it's just, it was almost, what I thought, what I wanted to do is to deter him from moving forward because it was only going to be painful for him and for everybody else.
I mean, there's no way you would have done what you've done in your career if you had that attitude in your 20s.
Oh my, there's no way. I mean, I was the girl who was up at 5 in the morning, went to the studio, got on the train, went to work, left work, went to the studio till 2 in the morning, got on the train, got, I mean, for years, and, you know, nothing happened. No one gave me a, like, you know, great song, great job, pat on the back, and it was just, I kept going and going and going until finally something hit. And if you don't have that sort of discipline and that drive, it's going to be very difficult for you to have a career in the music business.
John Kovach and the history of American popular music. Not everyone in the music industry are nice people, but I can't think of too many people who are known as either lazy or sort of impatient or, you know, not hard workers.
Well, it's true. I mean, think about, for example, the band that maybe gets the most history of rock band that gets the most trouble for that, and that would be the Rolling Stones, right? You know, just part Keith Richards falling out of a tree, this kind of thing. But you know, when those guys were working in the '60s, there wasn't a lot of party and drugs and women for Mick and Keith. They were back in the hotel writing songs nonstop. These were the days when you had to have 3 or 4 singles out a year and you couldn't miss. Everyone had to follow. They were touring. These guys were working really hard. It's, you know, but people believe these stories because it's more fun to think of them as just sort of wandering into the studio, but their natural talent allows them to be able to sing a song and all of a sudden it's a hit because they're such geniuses. But and there is a genius there, but the genius doesn't manifest without the labor that it takes to make it happen. And so what the fan sees and what a musician sees inside the music business are very different things. And fans needn't know all of this, but aspiring musicians ought to.
And I think it's, you know, if you've got someone who's, when you say the word work, people think, you know, how can you compare someone who's out there, you know, that's a contractor who's, you know, digging ditches or building something to writing songs? Like, which one is more work? But they're different kinds of work, and they both take endurance, you know, mental endurance in songwriting and physical endurance in, you know, being a contractor. But if you're an artist, it's also physical endurance. You're moving around a lot. You're away from your family. You're living in a world that's like a parallel universe. It's not real. You know, you're on a stage, and then the next thing you're in a hotel room, and you can't get anyone on the phone so you can get something to eat, and you haven't eaten in hours. So it's different things. But to say that, you know, in any art form, you know, you look at this jacket I have on, I'm sure so many hours and so much time went into the design of this, but we never think about that, what it takes for an artist.
And you can see how burnout can set in. And the mark of a lot of artists is how they work through the burnout. You know, I mean, after about 3 years in the limelight, if you look at the history of rock, most groups have sort of had their moment, and they're done. And it's the ones who are able to kind of regroup and come back at it again
that's
who
right.
are the ones that have the sustaining careers. And that's not so easy either, because what you go through during that intense period working up to the success and then riding the crest of it, is it takes a lot out of a regular person.
Well, even as a songwriter, it's hard to have. I mean, you know, I had my first hit when I was, oh gosh, what was I, 28 maybe, 27, and I'm almost 45 now, and I just wrote that, co-wrote that Kelly Clarkson song, and, you know, it's not easy to change it up, you know, and but you have to know that whatever you were doing in the room when you were 27 is going to be very different than what you're doing in the room now, and you have to be honest with yourself about what you're good at right now and what somebody else who's younger is
might
better
do,
at.
Yeah.
And John talks about burnout. You know, Kara earlier this hour mentioned that you wouldn't want to get stuck on performing the same songs year after year. You know,
no.
Billy Joel hasn't put a new song out since 1993, and he's still performing his same stuff, whereas Ryan Adams has written, I think, 500,000 songs. It's just interesting. Everyone's a little different in how they approach it. But I'm curious to know, you also mentioned working with some of the people you've worked with, and you said Darius Rucker's great guy. Who's somebody who the public generally has the wrong idea about?
Who's somebody that the public has the wrong idea about?
Who's somebody that would surprise us? Because it does not surprise me that Darius Rucker's a great guy. I hear that in a lot of ways. But
Let me think. Because, you know, I haven't really had an experience where I've been like, oh, this was
not necessarily bad, by the way. I'm not trying to
different.
Fish for any
let me
dirt.
Think. Yeah, let me think. Well, I would say, you know, I really enjoyed my time with Colby Calais, because I felt like, I mean, I actually went away with her to Hawaii with Jason Reeves and spent time with her family. And
she lives there. Did she?
She did. She did? Her family had a place there, but she's probably like the most normal in terms of she's maintained her real life. Like her parents, she still has family dinners every weekend. They all come over. It's very, nobody's ever dressed in makeup, paparazzi. It's not like that. And I found that very interesting with her, that it really just felt like I was hanging out with a friend from high school. You know, there was no difference. And not that there ever is a real difference when you're creating with them, but it was like, her life had really not changed that much, other than she was just about to step out and sing at the Grammys. It was very strange. There was nothing around her that could, you know, signal that she was a Grammy Award.
Well, you heard Kara mention Jason Reeves, who has written with and for Colby Calais, and Jason Reeves has also put his own stuff out there. And so I want to play a little clip of Kara DioGuardi singing with with Jason Reeves. This is a song called Terrified. You guys wrote it together? So let's listen to a clip, and then we'll come back and talk to Kara about this song.
That's right. Finally made it through the lonely to the other side. You said it.
All right, that's Terrified, written by Kara DioGuardi. First of all, you really can't. I mean, that voice is great, Kara.
Oh,
it's really great.
It's a gift. It's a gift.
It's outstanding. Sure. And you listen to Kara sing.
It's an instrument, you know, like the way you play guitar or, you know, I'm not the greatest player in the world, but that was always my instrument.
Well, you sound great. And I asked her when we were listening to this clip, I said, why is this not a super nuclear radio hit? Kara's gonna tell me why I'm wrong on this, but this is how out of touch I am. So yesterday, I've got a 3-year-old at home. I don't I am out of touch with the world. So yesterday, I finally came around to the fact that there's a guy named Ed Sheeran, and he's really good. I want to break some news here. You should look him up. Carrie, you should look him up. His name is Ed Sheeran.
Thank you. I'm going to go check him out immediately.
He's got a huge hit called Photograph, which is the same kind of a pace of a song that we just heard.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. You know, really catchy, easy to love and want to sing. What's different than Photograph? And that, what we just heard, that could be a huge hit.
Well, first of all, it would have been great if we'd written that song with an artist in the room for their record. You know, that wasn't for Jason. We just kind of wrote it. We wrote it for our souls. So it would have been great if it had a home. It also, you know, it is tempo-wise very different from what's going on in radio. And that's not to say that a song that's like, you know, that or an Ed Sheeran song can't break on radio, but there are not a lot of slots. And they're usually it's better if you're actually writing it as, you know, the artist.
Well, that's why I think there's got to be some luck involved here. It's a fickle industry.
Well, part of it is you know, when you say luck, it's like, you know, you look at someone like Katy Perry was dropped and signed and dropped and signed and dropped and signed. And then, you know, gets to that point where everything lines up, meaning she knows exactly what she's going to look like visually. She's got great songs. You know, everything is ready to go, and it goes. You know, is that luck? I don't know. My dad used to say luck is where opportunity meets preparation. I look at it like that. So, you know, can you make it if you are not a great performer and you've got a really great song? Sure, you could maybe have a hit, but are you going to sustain a career? And there's all different ways of making it. But I do want to go back to one thing you said about someone that we wouldn't think. And I would say, I should have said that Pink is one of the best songwriters out there. She is so good as a songwriter.
What makes you a great songwriter? We've talked a little bit about this, but how do you define it?
She just, you know, you'll say something, a line, and she will come back with something that's better than what you thought. Than your thought. You know, she'll up your thought. She'll up your game. And she's really good. She's really fast and she's smart and she edits while she writes. And I was really impressed by her. I was like, this girl's, she's a serious writer.
Talking to Cara DioGuardi, a songwriter herself. You just heard her, a performer herself, former American Idol judge, industry executive, and someone who is still writing. What are you doing now? I mean, I know you are, but what's the very, very latest?
What's the very latest? Oh, let me tell you what's going on. I am working with an artist named Clarity right now, and she signed to Lava. She is probably the most talented young artist I've ever worked with. She's 17. She has a song on Spotify right now called Sharks in the Swimming Pool, but she's just very unique, and she was given a gift from a time, you know, she's been writing maybe her early teens, and when she comes into the room and says, oh, I have this idea, it's like she's a seasoned pro, has been working for, I don't know, 20 years, the level of craft that she just has that instinct for. Working on that, I obviously still have Art House, which is a publishing company, and we have John Bellion, who co-wrote Monster for Rihanna, and trumpets for Jason Derulo. And I just came back from Nashville, did Tin Pan and still writing, and had the Kelly Clarkson Heartbeat song. I co-wrote that. So I'm very much involved in the creative part of writing songs, but also with my business and Clarity, who I actually manage and publish. So busy, busy, busy.
And she's here in Rochester today. John Kovach, for our listeners just joining us, do you schedule the rest of the day with Cara DioGuardi?
Well, we'll be at Eastman at 3:30 for a songwriting workshop with River Campus and Eastman students. And then the big public event is tonight at 7:30 in Lower Strong Auditorium on the River Campus. Cara and I will be talking, and there'll be an opportunity to ask her some questions there, too.
Well, we've got some questions now from our audience, and we'll just go down the list here. And you mentioned some of the people you're working with now, but one of the first is just who she considers a strong, up-and-coming, talented singer-songwriters right now.
Definitely Clarity, John Bellion. You're nodding. Do you know John Bellion?
Our engineer, Val. You went to school with him?
Yeah. Did you? You know, he's doing really well. Yeah, she's got a thumbs up for John Bellion. John Bellion, Clarity. There's some good Nashville talent that I'm starting to kind of get involved with, a girl named Ingrid Andress. And, you know, there's definitely some bright up-and-coming people, and it's a whole new game out there today. You don't need to be signed to a label. Labels are looking for you to bring in a story, you know, statistics, whether it's Spotify, views, anything that shows that you already have interest. They're looking for that. You know, it's no longer the days where a person just walks in the room and says, oh, you know, I have a voice, I have songs, but, and they say, well, okay, you know, what's going on? Do you have shows? Do you have followers, fans? And they say, no, I have nothing. That's going to be a hard sell for a record label.
Well, on that note, Hunter wants to know if Spotify is going to kill artists' income. And we've talked a little bit about that on this program, but you're right in the middle of the industry. You've talked to people. Is there
a
concern?
Well, so artists' income, I mean, I think it's more about songwriting, what you get paid as a songwriter. A lot of those services like Pandora, they don't pay the songwriters. And there's a lot of legislation going on right now. It's a hot topic because the legislation, it kind of, every time there's an issue, they put a Band-Aid on it, but they don't really fix the overall problem, which is that, you know, the legislation's from so long ago that it's not current. It's not current with what's going on in the music industry. So, yeah, there's a lot of things going on in Washington right now that are going to impact a person who decides to go into songwriting.
Do you want to see big changes in that? I mean, is it...
I think there have to be changes.
Yeah, yeah.
There definitely have to be changes. You have, you know, BMI and ASCAP and all that being looked at, and whether it should become free market, and publishers want to withdraw from those performing rights societies. You have just a million things coming together at the same time because technology has just changed the way we take our music in. And to add to the problem, you used to have songwriters who could make careers by having songs on albums that weren't necessarily singles. You cannot be a songwriter anymore and make any money by just having your song in an album, because albums aren't selling, unless you get lucky enough to be somebody on, you know, a Taylor Swift album cut. So that's a whole other issue, which means that, you know, the competition is, the middle has fallen out. You're either a very beginning or very at the top of your industry. But really, to be in the middle as a songwriter, you're struggling.
Another listener wants to know, what would you consider bad advice for aspiring singers and songwriters?
Bad advice would be write this song until you get it perfect. Hmm. Like, it's not great the way it is, go back and work on it. If it's not great the way it is on the first run, it's probably not going to get that great. It's for me, when I hear a song from somebody that's a young, aspiring songwriter, I'm looking for a nugget, just anything that's different, anything that has a little bit of magic in it. If it has it, then I would say, okay, let's look at this. If not, move on.
And yet I think of the Christina Aguilera song, Ain't No Other Man. When you heard her singing it, or at least that first cut of it, did you know at that point, oh, I was wrong about it. This is going to be huge?
Well, so when I say the track itself, we wrote to the track. So what I was saying is, I don't know about this track. You know, I'm not quite, when I say the track, it's the back music. I'm not sure about this. This isn't moving me. That's a little bit different than turning in a song, you know, called I Love the Sun, that I've heard a million times, and telling, you know, a writer, go back and really just keep on that one. You're on to something. You know, I would say just move on. I think too many writers spend too much time trying to write one song instead of, you know, keeping it moving.
Mark says, I'm an aspiring singer-songwriter. Can you ask her about the importance of buying actual albums? And Mark is essentially saying, he goes on to say that heard us talk about Spotify and other things, but he says no one buys albums anymore. And Mark is basically saying, if you support somebody, buy their work.
I agree. Buy their album, yeah. I mean, it's a great way to support artists.
But nobody wants, people, we have this generation now that I think developed starting in the late 90s with the advent of the internet. You know, newspapers go online, it's free. I think they probably regret that. I think they could go back to the late 90s and put up paywalls, they would. But the, sort of this notion of free content, there's an expectation now. It's harder to get people to pay for things.
It is, but I think with anything, if you think about the other side of that equation, which would be you don't have people writing songs anymore, and you've got, you know, people just not dedicated to that craft because they can't make a living from it, maybe it'll change. You know, I think you're always going to get music, though, one way or another. You know, whether it's the best in the industry that just keep writing and keep getting richer and richer, and you're not giving that opportunity to someone who's younger. But buying albums is definitely a way to support the arts. You know, if you love an artist and stay loyal to them, you know, maybe you don't love their second album, but give them a shot. That's another thing. It's that it seems like you love an artist for a minute and then you're on to the next one.
And John will tell you, you got to let somebody change if they want to. I mean, you've seen
I've said that a bunch of times.
The Beatles had a little bit of a breath to change.
If it was up to the fan, that singer would sing the same song in a different way over and over and over again with a different title and different lyrics. And they resent it when somebody changes. They think they've sold out or they've gone over to the dark side.
I'll never forget when David Spade did this stand-up routine. He said he went to see REM and he said, Michael Stipe gets up and he says, we got some new material. And I said, play the hits. I paid money to hear Stand and Shiny Happy People. All right, play it.
Well, I mean, there is something to that, but you know, at the same time, it's like artists sometimes they have years they're not the greatest years for them to create, and there's a lot of pressure. They've had a big hit, and the next one has to come out in 6 months. Who knows that they'll have an experience that'll drive that to be a great song?
All right, 20 seconds. Your advice to people who want to be in the industry and they see change and they're concerned about it: get in or get out.
If you've got a dream and you believe that you're great and you're going to work hard to attain that dream, go for it.
John Kovach, what are you going to talk about with her tonight?
Well, people will just have to come out and hear that. 7:30, Lower Strong Auditorium, University of Rochester, free of charge.
Free of charge. It's the In Conversation series that John Kovach has such a great job with at the University of Rochester's Institute for Popular Music. We always have such a good time with you. Thank you for bringing us here.
Thank you for having me, both of you.
Kara, it's
awesome.
Been a lot of fun.
Thanks.
And congrats on all the success you have had and continue to have in the industry.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening, Val. We've said
Val,
your
thumbs up.
We've said your
down.
Name enough this hour. Val's our wonderful engineer. And I should mention this once in a while. Music for this program is provided by Ra Ra Riot. They've got local connections, outstanding band, and we always thank them for their work. I'm Evan Dawson. Thanks for listening to Member Supported Public Radio.